Weekend Breakfast on 702. Let's walk the talk.
Right, let's climb right into it. And Vota Kelleman is no stranger to the Grammy Awards, having won a Grammy before having been nominated previously. He plays the flute, you see. He's also a producer, a composer, has become a regular on the prestigious Grammy roster as well. In fact, this is how his resume looks at the moment. Let me find you this. It's a sort of nice breakdown over here. It says over here, one Grammy winner, three Grammy nominations, 8 South African Music Awards, number 1 Billboard charts. Good morning, Vota, and welcome to 702.
Morning, Ray.
I hope I haven't embarrassed you too much. I'm sorry.
Very glad to chat to you. I'm excited. Thanks for having me.
Where do we find you at the moment?
I'm in Washington, D.C., so it's 1 a.m. here at the moment.
Okay. All right. We do have the Grammys coming up. But apart from all that, what are you doing in Washington?
Well, actually, I had a big show in Dubai, and then I came back to the U.S. after that to do some promotion around my album. And then soon after that, the borders got closed, were closed between South Africa and the U.S. So I was worried if I came back to South Africa that I would not be able to get back into the U.S. to go to the Grammys. So I kind of stayed here in the U.S. There's a lot of work opportunity here at the moment. Everything's pretty much open. So basically, I'm just working, trying to earn some much-needed money after a financial drought during the pandemic.
Yeah. What sort of work are you doing then? Is it just shows? I think, you know, there's Vegas that you've done and all sorts of things like that. What else are you doing?
Yeah, it's mostly recording. Mostly recording, but some shows here and there. Whatever I can pick up at the moment.
Fair enough. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, yeah. Pangaea. Tell us about Pangaea, because everything is about Pangaea at the moment.
Yeah, so this is an album that I created with David Arkenstone. He's an amazing multi-instrumentalist, 5 times Grammy nominee, and he's been famous since the 70s. So I'm a long-standing admirer of his, and he's a composer and a multi-instrumentalist. He wrote some of the music for the computer game World of Warcraft. So we've been speaking for a number of years now, and when the pandemic started last year, we thought this is an ideal opportunity to work together as we've been wanting to do. And so we started creating this album, and it's themed around Pangaea, which is the supercontinent that existed before it broke apart to form the existing continents. And and the theme of the music is basically to unite, for people to unite and not be so separate and so nationalistic, you know, and rather to stand together and care for each other. And also to look after the environment and look after the earth. Those two themes are basically what the music is themed around.
Okay. It's a lovely theme. It really is, because if we don't look after Earth, if we don't look after our environments, if we don't look after ourselves as well, things go horribly wrong. And playing the flute, it must be quite a journey to take people through that.
Yeah, you know, instrumental music sometimes has that advantage that you can say even more without words than you can with words, because you can express things that you're not able to express with words. And that's kind of how I think about it and how I feel. You know, I'm trying to express these feelings of sharing the love and the good energy. I know it's very cliched, but that's really how I feel. It's the spreading good energy and just sharing beautiful music, basically. That's basically what's behind everything.
Let's go back to your origins. Where were you born? Where did you grow up? And how come the flute? Because the flute's a beautiful musical instrument, but everybody else goes for the piano or the guitar.
I was born in Johannesburg, grew up in Joburg. And when I was 10 years old, my parents took me to a symphony concert and asked me which instrument I'd like to play. And even at that age, I wanted it attracted to me to use my breath, like in speaking or singing, to express myself. So I was drawn to the flute. And I remember my music teacher was sick the first week. And my mom was worried I'm going to break the flute if I put it together. So every day that week, we'd rented a flute. And every day that week, I just opened the case and look at the flute. And
that was quite to do.
So by the time my lesson arrived, I was so raring to go. And I had this amazingly beautiful, encouraging teacher. And she just lit the flame. I remember the first day after I had my lesson, I just went home and practiced for 3 hours on the first day.
Oh, wow.
And I just loved it from the first day. And there's just something very deep for me in the flute. You know, they've actually found some really old flutes, and it looks like the first flutes that were created from ivory tusks, mammoth tusks, were older than language. Well, we obviously don't know exactly how old language is, but the estimated start of language. So humankind possibly played flute before they really spoke proper language.
That's amazing. It really is amazing. It's a way to communicate.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in us, there's something deep and something very rootsy that can connect. And that's how I feel about it when I play the flute. You know, I do feel like I'm connecting to a past generations, perhaps going hundreds of thousands of years into the past somehow. So
that's interesting. So Vota, tell us about Winds of Samsara. That sounds, just the title of it is lovely, but tell us more, because that scooped you one or two awards, didn't it?
Yeah, that was a huge breakthrough for us. What happened was the previous year I had entered something for the Grammys, and so had an Indian composer and artist called Ricky Kej, and we both were not successful, but we had sent each other's music, and I really liked his music, he really liked my music. We started talking, and then we started talking about our common history with Mahatma Gandhi and Nelson Mandela. And how Mahatma Gandhi had been came to South Africa, and how he'd started his ideas of peaceful resistance in South Africa, and how he influenced Mandela. So we decided to write a song for Mahatma Gandhi and one for Nelson Mandela, and that went so well that we decided to do a whole album together, and that ended up being Winds of Samsara, and that really kind of scooped all the awards. It won a Grammy, it won 3 SAMAs, and it won many other awards. It was number one on the Billboard charts in the US, and it was a kind of a big breakthrough for me personally, and really opened a lot of doors.
Do you find it difficult, though, when you created a masterpiece like that, to do the next one? I know you got Pangaea now, but is it difficult to think, well, you know what, that was such a success. My mind is stuck in that concept. It's stuck down that sort of journey.
Yeah, I actually especially felt like that after my first album, which was in 2006. 2007, I released my first album. I was a relatively late starter because I'm also an electronic engineer, and I had to do work in engineering to make ends meet while my kids were young. I just, for my music, I just couldn't earn enough money in music. So I started quite late, and then I spent so many years making that first album, and I was so happy with it that I really felt the pressure when I did my second album.
Yeah.
But not so much after Winds of Samsara. I had actually already kind of half finished the previous album, in which I interrupted to work on Winds of Samsara. So it wasn't that much. And the next album I did was called Love Language, and that was also received a Grammy nomination. So I was on a kind of a...
Yeah.
sweet spot there.
You certainly were. But it also shows as well, but it also shows as well that how people regard your music. I mean, just to get a Grammy nomination is not a simple feat. It's actually an award in itself.
Yes, you know, for example, for Love Language, the follow-up album, that was nominated for Best Contemporary Instrumental Album. And all instrumentalists in the world compete for this award. So all pianists, all violinists, all sax players, all guitarists, you know, everybody is up for the same award. And so to be nominated means you in the top five albums in that year in the world, which is absolutely huge. You know, it really is huge. In the acting world, for example, you've got the Golden Globes, you've got the Oscars, you've got the Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah.
But in the music world, you only have the Grammys as the only real international award. So it kind of trumps everything else. So to get a Grammy nomination, for me, had seemed like an impossible dream all those years.
Yeah, it's quite something. Do you ever get to the point where you say to yourself, oh, hold on a second now, I actually won a Grammy. You've got to pinch yourself.
Yeah. I never even dreamed of winning a Grammy. You know, that was not even in my dreams. My dream was to get a Grammy nomination. Because also the other thing is, if you're not American, it's so much harder. Because the Grammy voting community are mostly 95% American musicians, engineers, and producers.
Right.
So I mean, and they don't know about you, and there's 20,000 entries every year, and nobody's going to listen. So somehow you to 20,000 albums. So somehow you have to kind of create the kind of exposure so that people know about you, so that they can give you a vote. And so it's really, really hard for, you know, I think South African musicians are just some of the most talented musicians in the world. And we deserve, just musically, we deserve to be, you know, I think there's many people who would deserve a Grammy nomination, but it's just because we're not American, it just makes it so much harder.
Tell you what we're going to do, two things. I'm going to play Winds of Samsara, New Earth Calling, so everyone can hear. And then after that, I want to ask you about table tennis, because somebody's actually tipped me off about your table tennis, but we'll get to that shortly. Right, here we go. This is Winds of Samsara, New Earth Calling. We can just mute yourself there, Voter. Sorry, we're hearing you come through, and we just want to hear Winds of Samsara, New Earth Calling. Voter, that's quite something. What? I mean, just to put that together must have taken months and months.
Yeah, that was a really big process. Lamine Sonko is the singer there. He's a Senegalese singer. And how I actually connected with him is Johnny Clegg asked me to open for him when he was touring in Australia. And then part of the legal framework of an opening act in Australia was that the opening band had to be majority Australian. So I had to find two Australians to play with me for the opening. And Lamine Sonko is a Senegalese artist who lives in Australia. So I found him. And then once I started working with him, we started writing some music together. And this was one of the songs that we did together.
Okay. What I have done for all those who want to see the music video, go to @RayWhiteSA on Twitter, and I've just tweeted the music video. It looks really, really, really good. Now, I've got a question for you here. Did you play table tennis at UJ? Because someone says, please ask Vota about his table tennis exploits. I believe he was a champion at UJ. Is that true?
Yes, I was the number one table tennis player at UJ and the also the president of the table tennis club.
So, oh, wow. Okay.
We table tennis playing family. My dad got us playing very early on. And I played league when I was about 10 years old, started playing table tennis league and also played SA universities. I think I was number 15 in the country, the South African universities.
Sure.
And yeah, so I love table tennis. So I actually studied engineering at UJ because I wanted to study music, but my parents didn't have enough money to send me to university. But I was offered a bursary to study engineering because that's my other talent is maths. So I went to UJ to study electrical and electronic engineering.
Yeah.
And I still kept up my music and I played table tennis. Those were my activities.
Something else you got up to was in 2013 with a performance of The Long Road on Nelson Mandela Day in front of a stadium of 80,000 people. Tell us about that.
The Long Road is a solo flute piece that I wrote for Nelson Mandela that uses a lot of extended flute techniques because, you know, the flute is such a versatile instrument. You can play a beautiful classical sound. You can play with a jazzy sound. You can sound funky. And then you can do all kinds of percussive effects. And you can even beatbox on the flute. We call it flute boxing.
Oh, really?
So,
How do you even do that?
You kind of beatbox into the flute and you use the air of your beatboxing breath to blow it into the flute and you use your fingers to change the notes of the air that goes through there. So I created this piece where it started with Nelson Mandela, with him growing up, so it's very peaceful. And then the middle section of his life where things were so hectic, I created the beatbox elements. And then in 2013, on Nelson Mandela Day, there was a big big concert of sports. There was rugby and soccer. And then I was asked to play this 5-minute solo flute piece. And I was so worried and nervous to play this in front of, you know, I didn't know whether anybody would have the patience to sit through 5 minutes of flute. But it worked out. It worked out, and it was my tribute to Madiba. It was just lovely for him to have heard that while he was alive.
Yeah, that is quite something. It really is. It's a memory. It's just such a memory and part of our history. And then something else you did in 2016, a performance in Johannesburg for the visiting Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi, a TV audience of more than 200 million people. No pressure there whatsoever.
Yeah, that was actually probably one of the most nerve-wracking moments in my life because what had happened was, on short notice, I was asked to do, I was already doing two pieces for Narendra Modi, and that was after we'd won the Grammy, so my links with India were strong already. But then I was asked to do both the South African national anthem and the Indian national anthem, but I didn't know the Indian national. I'd never played it before or even heard it before until that day or the day before. And I was so worried I'm going to do something wrong. in front of, you know, it was watched by more than 200 million people on Indian television. And Narendra Modi himself was there. I remember like 3 hours before I couldn't even remember how the anthem went even, I couldn't even. If you don't know something well, you can easily just forget it, And so for the next 3 hours, I just did the anthem over and over and over, and nobody was allowed. My Tulsi, my manager, tried to me, and I was like, no, I can't speak. I just did it over and over and over again. And fortunately went off well, and I was so grateful, because that could have been, if you make a big mistake like that, it can follow you for the rest of your career.
Yes, it can.
So it was nerve-wracking, but it all went out beautifully, went down beautifully. I'm very grateful.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. Right, we are chatting to Vota Kellerman this morning, who plays the flute. We'll be playing, hopefully, The Long Road. We're looking for your song. We have a few other ones as well. Vota, we're going to take some sports news and advert break, so go get yourself a cup of coffee, because it's about, 1 o'clock in the morning in Washington.
Weekend Breakfast on 702. Let's walk the talk.
26 minutes to 9 o'clock. Our profile interview this morning is flautist Vota Kellerman. He's won a Grammy. Looks like he's going to win one more as well. Vota, good to have you on the show this morning. Tell us about Vegas. What's it like playing at Vegas?
That's pretty amazing. You know, Vegas is everything that it's made up to be, plus more. I was surprised to like it there, It has, it's all flashy, but it has some depth. And the first time I played there was the U.S. National Flute Association has a yearly conference. And that's really the world's biggest get-together of flutists. They asked me to perform there when their conference happened to be in Vegas. And that year I was touring with my band in the U.S., and we managed to fit that date in there, and that was at Caesar's Palace. We played at Caesar's Palace, and it was quite something. And I've visited Vegas since then. After that, again, too. It's actually a really good place to do to go and work. A lot of at the moment in the U.S., a lot of New York-based musicians have moved to Vegas just because. There's so many shows happening there every day.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of performing opportunities over there.
Yeah, lots of gigs. Must be very nice. Is it daunting to play with other people who also play the flute?
Yeah. That's probably the most daunting when you play at a flute convention, where every person in the audience is like a serious flute player. So they know exactly what the problems are and what you're doing well and what you're not doing well. And so that's probably the most kind of nerve-wracking part. I'm actually usually very relaxed during performances, because it's kind of over the years I got quite used to it and quite comfortable on stage. But the most nervous I get is when I'm performing in front of my peers.
Mm. It must be difficult as well, because a lot of your peers, they are like you, they're very good, but a lot of them are, I suppose, classical musicians who studied at this varsity and that varsity or institution, and they think they know better. But, there's also Vota Kellerman, who has been doing this for how many years now? 30 years. How many years?
Of playing the flute?
Yeah. All your life, I suppose. But how many years sort of professionally have you been on the road doing it, taking it seriously?
I actually waited 20 years while my kids were growing up, and I got divorced early, and I had to look after my kids, so I couldn't be on the road or traveling in music. So I did engineering until 2005, and then when my daughter left university, I was in my mid-40s. I only made that conversion to full-time musician in my mid-40s. So basically, since then, 2005, that's 16 years now that I've been going absolutely full throttle. I waited so long. So, you know, I've had maybe three holidays in the last 16 years. But I'm absolutely loving playing the music, so it's all good.
I suppose going around the world and playing the flute, it is like a holiday in a way, because you're doing what you love.
It is, but it's kind of, I just had a look in the 10 years before the pandemic, I did 100 overseas trips.
Sure, that's a 100 lot.
100 overseas in 10 years, and it's a bit much, you know. Looking back, I don't know what came over me, but I just basically accepted all opportunities. And but it becomes hard work if you're in a different continent every month, and the jet lag and the travel, and it becomes another. I've kind of decided not to do that anymore. I'll definitely travel again, you know, but not as hectically as I have in the past.
Sounds like it. Okay, so you have been doing things for a long time. So let's play The Long Road. You played this on Nelson Mandela Day. Let's take a listen. Amazing. That's absolutely amazing. The Long Road, written for Madiba, performed in front of a stadium of 80,000 people. Vota Kellerman, a lot went into that, and I could hear the beatbox. That was the nice part. Towards the end, you can actually, or the middle actually, you actually hear that beatbox kick in. That must have been difficult to do all with one person.
Exactly, yeah. It's pretty tricky. Once you get into it, it's like everything else. You just keep on practicing and eventually becomes second nature, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a tweet here on @Ray1SA. It's from Andy Dickware. She says, "Thank you, Ray. I don't think I've ever listened to such heavenly music. Amazing." And that's exactly what it is. Vota, how do you put together your tunes? I mean, does it just come to you and think, oh, hold on, that sounds like a great idea? Or do you go into a studio and do you navigate with somebody else and think, right, let's try this, let's try that?
I actually studied classical music and played classical music for most of my life. And most classical musicians never improvise and don't write any tunes. So in 2005, I was completely clueless. I'd never written anything. I'd never improvised. And I got together with my guitarist, who was a classical guitarist, who's also just as clueless as I was. And how we went about it, we just basically played anything that just came into your mind. You know, you just, whatever comes up in your mind, you play it. And we felt comfortable with each other because we were both so bad. So most of it sounded dreadful. But every now and then, you just hit upon a gem or an idea that seems to work. And then you record it on your phone and keep it. And then you just carry on. You take that theme a little bit further. And basically, you just keep on trying things. You know, there's no kind of magic inspiration that happens. In my case, it's just like trying things until you happen to find something that's sounding nice, and then you put it together, and that's how we started, and that's kind of been how I've worked since then. And basically, you know, with Edward de Bono, the creative thinking guru, he was always in the business world, for example, he would take random elements and include it into the present problem, link it into a present problem for you to have a fresh way to approach it. And kind of we do the same thing musically, where we just bring in random elements and try and connect it with the present theme that you're working on. And somehow when you do that, you come up with some really interesting ideas in that process.
Yeah. Does it just pop in there, though? Like you're in the supermarket, like you said, and you just reach for your phone, like you said, you record it. But does it just pop into your head? Oh, I've got a tune. Do you wake up in the morning and go, oh, that's a nice one? Or is it, like you say, experimentation, etc.?
It's mostly experimentation. But once you start working on something, like it does happen, I go for a jog, and I'm actually working on a specific tune, and I'm kind of whistling under my breath as I'm jogging, and suddenly an idea would pop up and I would stop and just record it into, sing it into my phone or whistle it into my phone. And or it does happen sort of randomly when you listen to something else that inspires you, and you think, well, that's pretty cool, maybe I can include that in this specific project or this song that I'm working on.
Right, let's listen to Pangea, the album trailer. This is your trailer for Pangea. Let's take a listen. Thank you. right, there you go. That's the album trailer for Pangea. Vota Kellerman, you, as you listen to that, you can imagine the animals in Africa, the giraffe, the zebra running along, etc., etc., etc. It sounds like an advert for wildlife. It sounds really good. It sort of mellows you out.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that was, you know, the trailer is kind of a mashup of the different songs. So we put the trailer out on YouTube for people to enjoy it. And the first two songs you just heard, those are tracks 1 and 2 on the album. And it's definitely kind of epic, you know, beautiful nature scenes goes, you know, you imagine beautiful nature.
Oh,
song you just heard is called Desert Moon. And in our music video, we have used desert scapes. And we've also used a beautiful sand artist that paints with sand. And we created the music video to go with the music. And that's kind of been a theme that I've used in the last 15 years. We've created music videos for the songs, and trying, because these days people consume music visually, and I find it makes the music more accessible for people if they can watch it on a music video.
You're actually quite right. How do you sell your music today? Because in this country, we don't have CDs. You can go and pirate a whole lot of music if you want to, but then Vota Kellerman doesn't get the money for his artwork, etc. How do you market? How do you sell your music?
Yeah, it's been very challenging because, you know, with the onset of streaming, nobody sells CDs anymore. So you make money via Spotify or Apple Music, and it's such small amounts that it's not really worthwhile. So we've all changed our model, business model that we worked on, to focus on live performing. And so over the last decade or so, live performances have been where I've made most of the money. But obviously in the pandemic, that's now fallen under the...
Yeah.
So it's been pretty hard in pandemic times. I think everybody's had really tricky times. But yeah, the streaming is the name of the game, and YouTube. You know, people watch music on YouTube, and they listen to music on Spotify and Apple Music. And that's where it all happens at the moment.
You're actually quite right. That is where it all happens. In fact, at the moment, in exactly 2 minutes' time, I'll have your Pangea trailer up on Twitter at the moment so people can have a look at it and see it. Now, you're also involved in movies as well. I think it's called Eye of the Leopard. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was actually a funny story because when I just started my first album, I wanted to record somewhere, and I could find no studio that would make the flute sound nice. Wherever I went, it just sounded dreadful. And finally, J.B. Arthur was writing the music for this documentary, a wildlife documentary called The Eye of the Leopard. And he asked me to come and play, and I was, the flute was the voice of the leopard. And he made it sound so beautifully that I immediately said, well, this is the answer I've been looking for. So I wrote down all his equipment. You know, being an engineer, I'm quite a hands-on. So I wrote down all his equipment and all the settings on the equipment. And then I phoned Tulsi, who happened to be in New York, my manager, Tulsi, and asked her to get this equipment for us. And it was really expensive, but it was one of the best investments I've made in my life. So that whole process kind of showed me the way how to, because you have to take responsibility, I find, as a musician, for the whole sound. You can't just go in the studio and you play nicely. You also have to make sure it's recorded nicely. The Eye of the Leopard ended up winning an Emmy, actually. So it was my first experience playing, you know, playing flute in film.
An Emmy, a Grammy, and you're also involved in charity work as well, the SOS Children's Village in Ennerdale. Tell us about that.
I just love kids. I've always loved kids. And I think the best investment you can make is in a child, because if you can make some tiny bit of a difference to a child and allow them to improve their future, that has long-term knock-on effects, you know, because they are better people. Maybe they get married, they have kids, they're nicer to their kids. And it just has a, so it's always made sense for me to invest in kids. So about 20 years ago, I did some research to find an organization that does good work with children. And I found the SOS Children's Villages, and they do absolutely beautiful work. They find orphaned kids or abused kids, kids that have nowhere else to go, and they create families for these kids. They put 10 kids in a house with a house mother. And in the village that I went to visit in Ennerdale, the south of Johannesburg, there are about 10 houses, each with 10 kids. So these kids all have their own families now, plus an extended family in the village. And it's such beautiful work that they did that I decided that's kind of where I would like to invest. So I take care of, for the last 20 years or so, I've been taking care of one house, the living expenses of 10 kids. So all my music, CD sales and streaming income goes towards those kids.
Sure. That's really, really admirable. Here's another question. It's from a listener. Says, there's another South African flautist based near Washington named Deepak Ram. His genre is Indian classical, contemporary. Maybe there's an opportunity for a collaboration. Are you doing collaborations with other flautists?
Yes, I've been speaking to Deepak, he won some South African Music Awards a number of years ago, and he's pretty amazing. And he even had an entry into the Grammys this year. So I was speaking to his producer as well this year. He's a lovely musician. But I generally don't collaborate that much with other flute players, just because we do the same kind of thing. You know, it kind of makes more sense for me to collaborate with a guitarist that brings the harmonic elements, or so it kind of it's kind of more rare to collaborate with another flutist or even a sax player, or you know, it's normally with harmonic instruments or producers that I collaborate with, because the flute is not really a standalone instrument. It needs other instruments. You played the you know, the Long Road earlier, and I think that must have been the first time in 702's history that there was solo flute.
It was so lovely. You should actually see the reaction here on the SMS line. People are loving it. The WhatsApp line as well, both of them. People are just complimenting you.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, that's very rare that you get that you would play that on radio. It's kind of more of a live thing. But the flute actually needs, you know, it does well with guitar or piano or strings. So that's kind of my natural collaborators would be one of those.
Yeah, it actually makes perfect sense. Final question. We have about a minute left. What lies ahead for you?
Basically, what drives me is just to make beautiful music. And I'm as excited now as I've ever been, even more excited, just to make beautiful music. And whatever happens with it, I just send it into the world, and I try and do the music justice by doing the kind of promotion that would make sure it does get heard. And then I'm just happy to... for me, the whole process of just creating and is just so satisfying, and that's what drives me and what makes me tick.
Vota Kellerman, it's been great to chat to you this morning. Thank you so much for staying up. I won't keep you any longer, let you go back to sleep. That's Vota Kellerman. Thank you, and all the best for the future.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate you having me, and enjoy it, Ray. And thanks for, it's really easy to chat to you, and I had a fantastic time.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's Vota Kellerman. And all you have to do is go to @RayWhiteSA. I've just tweeted two of his songs, so go check them out. Easy as that. Or just go to YouTube. There are various songs on YouTube, and it's just lovely. Just get you into the mood for a Sunday.